Hello and welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Jisoo Gi. Thanks so much for staying right here with us on WGN Radio. Coming up in today's show, we're going to be talking about tech predictions for 2020, along with discussion on the fee increases if you're a rider of Lyft or Uber, or maybe you're a driver. We're going to talk about how it affects neighborhoods, drivers, and companies as well. So let's get started with John Najarian. He's got our stock tip of the day. Of course, he is co-founder of Najarian Family Office and is empowering traders at all levels through his company, Market Rebellion. Hi, John. Happy New Year.
Hey, G, happy New Year to you, too. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to tell you that. Okay, so let's just start with a stock tip of the day.
Well, I'm going to go with BP, which is, of course, an energy play. We've had a lot of activity in this name, institutional activity. And, G, the reason that I think both of us suspect that's happening is because of what's happening between the United States, Iran, and Iraq. Because an awful lot of production comes out of Iraq as well. And what goes on in Iran is being affected and affecting the price of crude oil as well as people's outlooks for longer-term contracts. And that's why I like BP right here.
Okay. So, you know, I know that you discussed before your heat seeker formula for figuring out what to invest in. Are you still using that, or do you have different formulas, or what are you taking into account when you're picking your stock of the day?
Sure. Well, sometimes we use data from Battlefin, which is basically web traffic, online receipts that are being emailed out to people, things like that. There is so much right now, G, in that data, that alternative data space, that we use that as well as big institutional block trading of stocks, options, or futures. That those things are what drive us into the stocks that we buy for ourselves and for clients.
So you're saying that you work with traders at all levels. So, you know, from the very advanced to just the beginner. If someone's just starting out, what's one tip that you would have for them?
Be disciplined. The same tip that I'd have if you are super advanced. And sometimes even the really advanced traders, hedge fund types, need a little refresher on that discipline because they hold the losers too long and or they don't take their profits, and you need to do both. So we set definite levels for cutting our losses and for being disciplined about taking profits. So I'd say discipline is the number one thing for any trader.
Well, you were just talking about investing in BP and foreign affairs, but trending right now is that the U.S. trade deficit has fallen more than expected to hit the lowest levels since President Trump took office. So how is that affecting stocks?
Well, I think overall people are being driven by his tweets, the president's tweets, as well as, of course, global events. And I think those are the primary drivers right now in the short term. As far as longer term, I think we're going to have continued positive things like, for instance, the trade deficit going down, as you say, lowest level since he's taken office now, which is one of his goals, was basically to realign what he thought were unfair trade practices put on us by other countries and so forth. I think also you're going to see interest rates in the United States pretty stable this year rather than three or four cuts like we saw last year. I think they'll be more or less right around here by the end of the year. So I think all that means that the dollar is probably going to weaken, which will make it easier for us to export goods from our country, even if it makes goods slightly more expensive that we import from other countries.
So, John, another story that's been trending has been the strength of gold and that people are investing in gold still. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, you and I both know, G, that if you have people that feel uncertain for whatever reason,
right,
about the economy, about what the Fed might do, about what the president might do, or for that matter, the potential for this conflict escalating, they tend to want something that has a disconnect from the stock market, and gold is definitely one of those things. It had a great year last year, didn't perform as well as the market, but nonetheless, we traded up over $1,500 and held that. That's $1,500 to the ounce, as you know. And now we're seeing a big move again in gold, and obviously that's attributable to people basically saying, I need a little something that isn't tethered to the stock market, something that maybe is disconnected from that. So if things don't go so well in the stock market, this is like a safety net. Many of us thought cryptocurrencies may have filled some of that gap, but lately it's really been gold, and it hasn't been so much about crypto.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up and ask you about crypto, because I know you've been at the forefront of that. How are you feeling right now about investing in crypto?
I still feel pretty good about it, but I'm lucky enough that I'm basically in crypto, and I'm referring to Bitcoin really exclusively, since it was about 300 per coin.
I didn't sell.
Yeah, I'm not a smart guy, though. I didn't sell when it went to 19,000. I held it and didn't sell till it fell to like 11. But after last year, where it got all the way down to 3,200 per Bitcoin, now it's back up over 7,000. And I still feel pretty good about it. But obviously, I wish I took my own advice and was more disciplined in 2017 and took those profits.
Well, it was soaring so fast, we thought, well, maybe it'll go up even more. But so we can't blame
you. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, John, for joining us. Always love and look forward to you being with us every week. So John Najarian, thank you for your stock tip of the day. It was BP and co-founder of Najarian Family Office. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gene. Have a great afternoon.
You as well. Joining us now is the president and CEO of Thomas. Thomas highlights sourcing trends based on buyer activity. And Tony Uphoff is with us. Hi, Tony.
Hey, G. How are you? Great to be on.
Yeah, fantastic. For those of us that don't know, can you describe Thomas and tell us what you guys do?
You bet. Yeah, ThomasNet.com is our core platform, and it's the leading resource for industrial product services sourcing. So every 2 seconds, an engineer, procurement professional is sourcing a product or service, and every second, an engineer is downloading one of our product data files. So it gives us this incredibly unique window into the industrial economy in North America.
So I'm hearing over 1 million industrial buyers visit your site every month.
That is right, and that's on an average month, and we have a little over 1 million active registered users. So we're about 3 petabytes now, which is a massive amount of buyer behavior data that we track on a regular basis.
It sounds like you've got a good following there.
We do. Thank you.
So you've got top tech predictions for 2020, and electric vehicles top that list, which doesn't surprise us.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's nothing new about electric vehicles. I mean, if you go back through history, my gosh, electric vehicles actually predated, combustion vehicles. But what's starting to happen is the infrastructure around electric vehicles and the technology fueling them is accelerating. So a recent, grouping of 29 major automotive brands are collectively now investing $300 billion in electronic vehicle technology. So we're looking at this and realizing that we've hit a tipping point. And now what you're also seeing, G, is that larger vehicles are becoming electric vehicles now, SUVs and some of the others where car manufacturers have really made their margins. So we think you're going to see, pardon the expression, an acceleration of electronic vehicles or electric vehicles primarily based on now the advanced technology, the price points coming down on these batteries, and the ability that the consumer now sees these as more mainstream vehicles than fringe vehicles that they might have been five or six years ago.
And when you're talking about these larger vehicles, SUVs and trucks, you're talking about the more accessible brands and as well as the luxury brands, too.
You got it. So, you know, Ford has announced the Mustang Mach-E. That's not an SUV, but they've already started to deliver on some of their trucks in electric formats. But then the luxury vehicles that we've known about, Audi, Jaguar, Mercedes, and Tesla, who's been around for a while, but these other luxury brands are now coming out with fully electric vehicles. So we've clearly hit the acceleration point on this becoming more mainstream.
Well, let's keep it with the car talk. Of course, we just talked about electric vehicles, but also everyone's been talking about driverless autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. There's an old adage in the Silicon Valley that we tend to underestimate how long it takes a phenomenon to happen and underestimate the actual impact over time. And autonomous vehicles is a good example of that. You're going to see a huge lift in this part of the market based on the growth of 5G technology, which will open the door for autonomous vehicles. So that's another trend I'll introduce here for a second. But autonomous vehicles are held back simply by the packet switching of being able to have enough data and information wirelessly communicated back and forth between the car and how the car is being controlled. As that bandwidth increases through 5G, you're going to see a remarkable lift in autonomous vehicles. We're close now. You're starting to see it develop. But what's holding it back a little bit is simply the bandwidth. The technology of being able to produce autonomous vehicles and actually manage them has been around for a while. Think of 5G as just a bigger pipe to allow the communication back and forth within and away from the vehicle, so that you'll see really a very, very fast growth of autonomous vehicles over the next several years.
Where do you think we are in terms of consumers accepting self-driving cars?
Boy, that's the question, isn't it? Right? You know, I mean, I it is one of these kinds of funny things. You know, you would know, and all of your listeners would know, you know, most airplane flights that you're on, you know, the pilots are really managing from the takeoff and then the landing, and there's large portions of the flight that while they're monitoring it, the flight is on quote-unquote autopilot, and those are machines managing that. It's not a completely autonomous flight, I don't mean to say that, but we've had that kind of technology for a while. I think you're touching on probably the biggest barrier to autonomous vehicles, which is really consumer adoption or consumer comfort. So our prediction is you're going to see this mostly in commercial areas first. So it started to happen in shipping. You're seeing more and more large-scale ships that are fundamentally almost completely autonomous that are crossing oceans now. And then a team comes on when they get to a port to bring it in. We're seeing similar dynamics in long-haul trucking. So we think that's where the adoption is going to happen first. But over time, if you look at cities like Chicago, cities like being here in New York City, the traffic flow and being able to manage traffic through autonomous vehicles may very well get adoption from consumers more easily than we perhaps think.
That's going to be really... I can't wait to see how this happens because I'm just hearing back from feedback from my friends and drivers. So you just mentioned universal 5G in relation to self-driving cars, but what in terms of our wireless carriers?
Yeah, you know, this is without question and with no hype connected to it, this is a game changer. So 5G is going to enable so many different things. So certainly we talked about autonomous vehicles, but you look at the implications for healthcare. You look at the implications for so many different applications of this. I think to the average consumer, sometimes we might think, oh, this just means I can download movies faster. That's not at all what this is going to be. This is going to be a remarkable lift in the ability for us to provide data at ridiculous speeds. So things like being able to look at an enormous amount of medical data and information and be able to have people around the world looking at it in real time and be able to work with patients. You're going to see, we mentioned, you know, before, autonomous vehicles. You're going to see all kinds of different applications in most every industry you could possibly imagine, from agriculture all the way through to transportation. So it's a big deal, and it's going to take a bit of time as the infrastructure gets built out, but it's way beyond just kind of, you know, that I can get my my applications on my iPhone downloaded faster, although that will be a benefit too. But I think most industry watchers are actually more enthused by the infrastructure and the business implications, the real fundamental applications that will be enabled with this, not just simply the consumer applications of watching videos or other things and being able to download applications faster.
So it goes way beyond just being able to download at lightning speed. Let's talk about artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so again, artificial intelligence gets buzzed around a lot. One of the trends we've been watching very closely is this idea of artificial intelligence as a service. And so not any different than software as a service and other things. What's happening now, companies like Google and Microsoft and Amazon and IBM have created the infrastructure, and they've got the technology power where they can now provide this as a service. So within your listenership, you have a very large swath of manufacturing economy in the city and state in your area, and a lot of those companies are starting to look at the use of artificial intelligence to speed their production or some of their manufacturing processes or services. And historically, those types of tools have been financially out of the reach of the average company. Let's say a small to medium-sized manufacturer. You can now start to subscribe, if you will, to these types of services and have access to the computing power of artificial intelligence for you to be able to do advanced production work and manufacturing and other things that heretofore just, you know, where you were priced out of that. That's now accessible to smaller and medium-sized companies. So we're predicting a significant growth around this idea of artificial intelligence as a service that will also start to create, as more and more companies start to use it, the learning of artificial intelligence will continue to accelerate, because it is a bit of a wisdom of the crowds. As more and more companies start to use these kinds of tools, the data starts to get built up, and those data sets allow us to improve the efficacy and the accuracy of artificial intelligence.
Well, artificial intelligence to flourish way beyond its current applications. Thank you so much for joining us, Tony. I can't believe we're out of time. It was fantastic to talk to you. Looking forward to talking with you again. Tony Uphoff, President and CEO of Thomas. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, G.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm G, joined now by Bryant M. Greening, the co-founder of Legal Rideshare. Hi, Bryant.
Hi there. How are you?
Fantastic. It seems with the start of the new year, all we've been talking about is legal pot and this tax that's on Uber and Lyft.
Two of the biggest stories in Chicago.
Absolutely. So let's break down these fee increases. Let's talk about who it affects and what it means for neighborhoods. And John Williams actually mentioned something that I needed to ask you about as well. What is included in terms of mapping out the area of the loop and what's considered downtown?
Sure. Well, there are specific areas in the downtown region, which is basically what you would consider to be the loop in the north side. The biggest increases in the fares are going to be to that specific area during 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. rush hour. That fee is going to increase to $3, which is substantial when you think about what it costs to take a ride during that period of time.
So the $1.25 tax that's added on to a single passenger trip, that's a flat tax for anywhere in the city?
Correct. So there's an additional $1.25 that's going to be for citywide solo trips. If you want to sit in the car by yourself, you're going to be charged that extra fee. Now, shared rides actually have decreased in tax by 7 cents. So there's a savings there for people who are willing to share.
Which makes sense, because all of this is geared towards lessening congestion.
That's correct. So we've seen congestion really increase over the past few years. When Uber and Lyft came to town, they put many more cars on the streets. We've seen a 309% increase in the number of TNP, which are the Uber and Lyft cars, that are in the downtown areas on weekdays between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. in the past 3 years. So things have gotten much more congested very quickly.
And a portion of the additional revenue that is being collected is going towards fighting congestion or helping public transportation?
Yeah, so they're expecting that $40 million will be generated annually with these new taxes, and a portion of that money is going to be dedicated to improving public transportation. So one of the biggest issues that we've seen over the past few years is that ridership on the CTA is going down. More people are taking Uber and Lyft instead of it. So CTA needs to make improvements and draw people back into its system.
So I know it just started, so it's hard to tell what the effect is exactly. But what have you been hearing in terms of drivers and from aldermen and neighborhoods that are affected and also, you know, the companies?
Well, there's multiple players here. When we look at the community as a whole, people who use Uber and Lyft as a primary mode of transportation, they're obviously concerned. We have gotten used to rides being pretty cheap and being able to hail a ride on demand and know that we're going to get there without breaking the bank. That's about to change. A $3 increase is substantial, particularly when most people are using, not most people, but when many people are using Uber and Lyft to get to and from work, that can add up quickly. The driving community is extremely concerned because they're worried about the impact that it's going to have on demand. Many people have uprooted their lives, quit traditional jobs, and have started to work in the rideshare world. That was with the understanding that people were going to be continuing to use the platforms, people were going to continue to request rides regularly and every day. They're concerned that this is going to change, and there might be fewer rides to go around, which means less money in their pocket and fewer opportunities.
So, Brian, I take an Uber or Lyft every day. It's cheaper for me than owning a car, paying for parking. And for me, I'm going to think twice about taking an Uber downtown. I mean, I tend to take it more in the wintertime because it's just a little harder to deal with the CTA. But I do believe that this is going to affect drivers and how many people are going to use Uber or Lyft.
That's really what we're anticipating. I don't think there's any question that it's going to be a positive in terms of congestion fixing. I mean, we have seen many new Uber and Lyft drivers come out because this is an area ripe for business. People have been using this service very often, and it's so convenient and so cheap. They've got, you know, they've just put it, they've made it their regular mode of transportation. They're replacing the CTA with Uber. I think a lot of people are going to head back to the CTA, and they're going to say, I can't afford to continue using these apps in the way that I once did.
Now, will this help cab drivers? Will this give them a leg up now inside these neighborhoods that are subjected to the $3 upcharge?
It may. However, cab fares have traditionally been higher than Uber and Lyft to start. That was one of the reasons why Uber and Lyft were able to come into the market,
right,
and dominate the way that they have. I don't think that people are going to be willing to pay this amount of money to anybody, whether it's Uber, whether it's a cab company. I think they're going to be drawn either to the shared rides in the rideshare companies or back to public transportation.
Got it. You know, we're running out of time, but just really quickly, and we'll have you back on to talk about this, because I talk to my drivers when I am in an Uber or a Lyft, and it seems to be there's some confusion as to what type of coverage in terms of car insurance they need to have. We'll have you back on to talk about it, but just really quickly, what should drivers have?
The best advice I can have is make sure that you have collision coverage in your personal auto policy. Many drivers are unaware, and the companies do a terrible job of explaining this, but if you don't have collision coverage in your personal auto policy, you're not going to be covered during certain events that occur on the app. That means if you cause an accident and your car is totaled, you might be in a position where you lose the vehicle, you can't get it repaired, all of a sudden you've lost your means of income, and literally you can't pay the bills. So if there's one thing that I can tell drivers to do immediately, it's to get on the phone with their insurance agent and add coverage if they don't have it already.
Sometimes I've been in an Uber or a Lyft where they've rented the vehicle from the company. Are they covered if they rent the vehicle, or do they still need to check in? I mean, what if they don't have they don't own a car in everyday life?
So when you rent from the companies, it does come with insurance, and you should be adequately protected there. But in that regard, you know, you don't have your own vehicle. You're much more limited in your abilities to use the vehicle in certain aspects. So insurance is taken care of in that regard, but there are other issues that you've got to deal with that come with rentals.
Bryant Greening, we're going to check back in with you as this plays out. I'm going to be, I think all of us are very curious to see how this is going to affect drivers and riders and, you know, how much business neighborhoods get in terms of the neighborhoods that are affected by the $3 fee. So thank you so much, Bryant, and we'll have you back on soon.
Thanks for having me.
That was Bryant Greening, co-founder of Legal Rideshare. Amy Guth, host of Crane's Daily Gist, is in studio with us. Always look forward to you being here. What's going on today?
Well, so, you know, we have lots of tech news today. In fact, I kind of combined two tech stories. I usually do the four top stories on Crane's Daily Gist. I snuck in a fifth one today because I kind of combined, here's the thing in tech news, and did it like that. So one of them is an executive who used to be with FeedBurner and Signal has been tapped for Visco, the photo app, I'm sure.
I know about Visco. I don't know what FeedBurner is.
A lot of people have been like, how do you say that? Admittedly, I had to Google because it's VSCO, but that's like the Webby way. You omit vowels, you know?
Yes.
So Visco is a cool photo app. I've played with it a little bit. Anyway, so he's going to build a tech team here. And it's yet another big California company who's putting down some roots and investing in Chicago's engineering talent and tech talent community, which is really cool. So that's one. Another one, in that very same vein, there is a nonprofit called P33 that is backed by Penny Pritzker, and they have just signed a lease for 5,500 square feet in Fulton Market, which tells me a couple of things. Number one, yet another big company going to Fulton Market. There's going to be a lot, like what's going on there is nothing compared to what's going to be happening, is my prediction.
How can that neighborhood take any more?
They're building up and they're building west. That's how. So they, now we're going to start seeing buildings heading, I mean, up to and beyond Union Park, up to Damon, even that far where Urban Belly was. That's going to be this huge skyscraper of a building this very soon.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that's a thing. But there's a building. It's at 1234 West Fulton, and it is a large building from a Dallas-based developer, Trammell Crow. And they paid $12.4 million for this building. So talk about whoa in Fulton Market. That's a lot. They're hoping that Penny Pritzker's nonprofit, P33, it's kind of there to nurture and help other tech companies. She co-created it after about 150 different business leaders. She talked to a lot of people and just said, hey, what would it take to make Chicago a really significant tech hub? Like, what would it take for us to compete with Silicon Valley and things like that? And so that's kind of the aim of P33. And it's named for looking at year 2033. So like by 2033, what can we accomplish in the tech world? And so the hope from this Dallas developer is that her nonprofit in the building will encourage the other 7,000 square feet to get rented up by tech space. So it might be kind of like 1871 when it's all said and done. So to me, those are two really interesting stories about like, hey, you know what? We're doing okay here. We're kind of holding our own in the tech space.
So it's somewhat like a tech incubator.
Yeah, it remains to be seen, but that's what it sounded like to me. I think that's a really interesting thing. And I mean, the story about Penny Pritzker's P33 to me is the intersection of two big stories, and that is, holy moly, Fulton Market.
It
just keeps on going and
you
going and going.
You heard my reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I talked with so many people at Crane's about, so many reporters at Crane's about Fulton Market, both Danny Ecker and Albie Galoon in the commercial real estate space, Dennis Rodkin about the residential real estate space, then John Pletz about the tech startups, all this stuff happening in Fulton Market. So I think it's really interesting. I mean, my question is always, okay, when does the shoe drop? What's the bubble? What's that going to be? But it does not appear that it's anywhere in sight right now. So that is one thing I talked about. The other thing I talked about on Crane's Daily Gist today, I talked with Hugh Delios, who is the editor of Crane's Forum, which is such a cool thing. It's a 12-month deep dive, one topic per month on these humongous issues that are really complex, like gun violence, water, housing, wages and labor. I mean, huge things that we're like, where do you even start to fix that? And so what each episode or issue is kind of a deep dive, in-depth reporting alongside some community voices and some leaders in the space to raise some different perspectives. And so Hugh and I talked today about what that project has meant 8 months in, what's ahead in the 4 months still remaining. There's a lot of big topics. I mean, when you think about 12 topics really pressing on Chicago, education, I mean, I mentioned water, huge topics, and he's gotten a lot of really interesting guest voices. So always enjoy having him on onto Crane's Daily Gist, because the forum is there for this, you know, deep dive that we don't often get to see. We often kind of just see what's the gist of it, what's the headline, let's go.
Well, we're always subjected, you know, we're pressed for time, and then we're subjected to word counts. So.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, we in a time when I'm not even sure people click through on the tweet anymore. I think people just look at the headline and just assume what you're talking about and don't necessarily always read the story. Even I think I've even noticed language has shifted when you say, hey, there was this story in the New York Times about XYZ, and I know you're interested in that. People go, yeah, I saw that. They don't say I read it. They say I saw that. To me, that is a tell that scares me to death. So I love what the forum is doing, and I love how it's kind of this deep dive where you don't often get to kind of sit within an issue with, you know, 15, 20 pieces of content about different areas of
it.
And
you said how many issues facing Chicago?
Well, so it's a year-long look. And so the publisher of Crane's, Jim Kirk, created this idea of, you know, let's take a year and look at 12 of the biggest issues we can think
of. So one for each month.
That's right. So okay. The one right now is about wages and labor. Before that, it was about cannabis, particularly the social equity piece of it, which is something we've seen in the news the last couple of days in a big way. And then, you know, Hugh and I talked about some of the issues coming up, like taxes and all of those things. So lots of big issues facing the city, and they take a look at it from a lot of different points of view that I think is really, really cool.
Well, always anything that affects our pocketbooks, because it affects our ability to live and how well we live, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for a business publication that kind of that's always the focus of what's the bottom line on paper. This is also a very human piece of it. In particular, the gun violence issue. There was a guest column that was so beautiful that kind of succeeded, definitely succeeded in, hey, here's the main narrative, but let's look even deeper and let's really, and I think that's something each issue of the forum has been able to do of say, like, we know what the main narrative is. Let's challenge it with data. Let's look beyond it and let's get other voices in the room.
And you said right now the wages and labor is the one for this month?
Yes, which is really, really interesting. There's a lot of data around gender in the workplace that I found really, really interesting. There's a lot of information about, you know, what are jobs doing right now? What jobs are thriving? What will thrive? Where are the sticking points? Where are the big pieces of inequality? Where maybe the bosses at the top are making a lot and the workers doing the work are not making so much. So there was a lot of really interesting points of view there in that one, and took a look at some sectors that are having some moments for better or worse.
Well, thank you, Amy Guth. Tell us where we can find Crane's Daily Gist.
You can head to Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify, any of those places, and you can hear Crane's Daily Gist every afternoon, or you can just go to Crane's website. You can subscribe to their afternoon newsletter, and it comes right to your inbox. How easy is that?
And is Crane's Forum also available?
Yes, Crane's Forum. So some of Crane's content is a registration wall, and you'd have to be a subscriber. But Crane's Forum is open to the public, so anybody can go. There's up in the top navigation. You can just go to Crane's Forum and look at all those topics and read all of that great reporting.
Well, fantastic. Thank you, Amy Guth.
Thank you.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.